but Paget's disaster the day before precluded him from getting near the jury. Lucian called to the witness stand his mother, Letty Paget. She was a 50-ish woman with pleasant features and short graying hair, and she wore a black dress as if she was already mourning the death of her son. Led by Lucian, she unsteadily began testimony that seemed scripted down to every pause in her cadence. There was Danny the little boy, fishing every day after school, breaking his leg falling from a treehouse, and winning the spelling bee in the fourth grade. He was never any trouble in those days, none at all. In fact, Danny had caused no trouble at all growing up, a real joy. His two older brothers were always into something, but not Danny. The testimony was so silly and self-serving that it bordered on ridiculous. But there were three mothers on the jury, Miss Callie, Mrs. Barbara Baldwin, and Maxine Root, and Lucian was aiming for one of them. He needed just one. Not surprisingly, Mrs. Paget was soon in tears. She would never believe that her son had committed such a terrible crime, but if the jury felt so, then she would try and accept it. But why take him away? Why kill her little boy? What would the world gain if he were put to death? Her pain was real. Her emotions were raw and difficult to watch, to sit through. Any human being would feel sympathy for a mother about to lose a child. She finally collapsed and Lucian left her sobbing on the witness stand. What began as a stilted performance ended in a gut-wrenching plea that forced most of the jurors to lower their eyes and study the floor. Lucian said he had no other witnesses. He and Ernie made brief final summations, and by 11 a.m., the jury once again had the case. Ginger disappeared into the crowd. I went to the office and waited, and when she didn't show, I walked across the square to Harry Rex's office. He sent his secretary out for sandwiches, and we ate in his cluttered conference room. Like most lawyers in Clanton, he had spent the entire week in the courtroom watching a case that meant nothing to him financially. "Is your gal gonna stick?" he asked with a mouthful of turkey and Swiss. "Miss Callie?" I asked. "Yeah." "She okay with the gas chamber?" "I have no idea. We haven't discussed it." "She's got us worried, along with that damn cripple boy." Harry Rex had quietly involved himself in the case in such a way that one would think he was working for Ernie Gaddis and the state. But he wasn't the only lawyer in town secretly abetting the prosecution. "It took them less than 60 minutes to find him guilty," I said. "Isn't that a good sign?"
"Maybe. But jurors do strange things when it's time to sign a death warrant."
"So then he'll get life. From what I hear about Parchman, life there would be worse than the gas chamber." "Life ain't life, Willie," he said, wiping his face with a paper towel. I put my sandwich down while he took another bite. "What is life?" I asked.
10 years, maybe less."
I tried to understand this. "You mean a life sentence in Mississippi is 10 years?
"You got it. After 10 years, less with good time, a murderer sent to prison for life is eligible for parole. Insane, don't you think?"
"But why?"
"Don't try and understand it, Willie. It's just a law. Been on the books for 50 years. And what's worse is the jury doesn't know it. Can't tell them. Want some coleslaw?"
I shook my head.
"Our distinguished Supreme Court has said that the jury, if it knows how light a life sentence really is, might be more inclined to give the death penalty. Thus, it's unfair to the defendant."
"Life is 10 years? I mumbled to myself. In Mississippi, the liquor stores are locked up on election day, as if the voters would otherwise get drunk and elect the wrong people. Another unbelievable law.
"You got it," Harry Rex said,
then finished his sandwich with one huge bite. He pulled an envelope off a shelf, opened it, then slid a large black and white photo across to me.
"Busted, buddy," he said with a laugh.
It was a photo of me making my quick exit from Ginger's room at the motel on Thursday morning. I looked tired, hungover, guilty of something, but also oddly satisfied.
"Who took this?" I asked. "One of my boys. He was working on a divorce case. Saw your little communist car pull in that night. Decided to have some fun."
"He wasn't the only one."
"She's a hot one. He tried to shoot through the curtains, but couldn't get an angle."
"Shall I autograph it for you?"
"Just keep it,"